We will talk about court orders, collective bargaining, Supreme Court candidates, and much more in this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, April the 1st. Happy April Fool's Day. But we won't pull any pranks this hour. We will ask, though, for your input on the top political news stories of the week, state, national, and international. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. Margaret Farrow is with us. She is former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin and chair of the Wisconsin Eye Broadcast Network. Her views here do not represent Wisconsin Eye. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for being with us. Mm-hmm. And Georgia Durslotti is with us, professor of political science at Beloit College. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Georgia.
Well, as usual, we have a lot to talk about. Let's talk about, starting with Georgia Durslotti, is the third time the charm, Georgia Durslotti, a third court order issued by Dane County Judge Sumi yesterday to stop the implementation of the state's collective bargaining restrictions.
Well, court orders are such that it may hinge on whether or not they need to go back and hold another meeting with proper notice, and then they can go ahead and pass it because they have the votes, or do they? I was so amazed, and then I was appalled that somehow the Walker administration thought that they didn't have to pay attention to the courts. I mean, what were they thinking? Do they think they're above the law? Are they so fixed on being the decider? I was pleased when they came to their senses and said, "Let's just do this properly," because they weren't doing it properly.
Well, the Walker administration thought that the Legislative Reference Bureau's publication of the collective bargaining law made it law.
Of course, but they didn't. When the court says stop, they tried every maneuver they could. It was clear that they tried every angle that was possible in there.
Now,
but when the court says stop, you don't want to look like you think you're above the law.
I know you can't read their minds, Margaret Farrow, but what were they thinking?
Well, I guess I like the term that Georgia just used. She used the term maneuver. If there's any maneuvering going on here, it's by the minority. I've never in my lifetime, and that's pretty long now, I've never seen the minority control the agenda or attempt to control the agenda when they didn't win the election. Our president, time after time, has said elections have consequences. The minority in the state of Wisconsin is attempting to run the show, and that's the problem. They haven't accepted that there is a new majority in Wisconsin. So now, having lost... And I can argue on the other side, Georgia, there is a law, a rule in the state legislature that overcomes law in terms of public meetings, that you do not have to notice when you're in special session. There is no notice needed, just a posting of a meeting that will be carried on.
Well, we'll find out from the courts on that one. And I just want to take a little bit of issue with you on the minority has never tried to control the agenda. I actually think that Republicans have been masterful at controlling the agenda from a minority position.
Well, I disagree in that they have not tied the hands of actual law that has passed by tying the hands of letting it go forward by using the courts. I think this judge, I'm sure a very intelligent, knowledgeable the jurist, is really making a long, long study of how she can carry out this review she has to do. She was asked a question. She was asked a rule. Because of her own personal calendar, we're now in the third week of that decision-making. And we have a state with local budgets, with a state budget, with citizens that are wanting to get on with their lives and know what the situation's going to be. And she, meanwhile, is slowing this down to a great degree. I have heard law professors from both major law schools argue both sides of this issue. It is not clear. So why, if it has already not gone, the Court of Appeals has not taken the state's request to let this thing continue to move on, why the Supreme Court isn't now acting on it, I'm not sure.
Now, there is the court hearing in Dane County. Judge Sumi's courtroom will resume this morning, I think, at 8:30. And she is trying to determine if the state's open meetings law was violated by the short notice on that vote. But she said this week that the lawmakers could make this all go away by just voting a second time on the legislation and giving the notice required under the state's open meetings law. Margaret Farrell, why doesn't the legislature just do this all over?
Well, I think there's several reasons, and if I were there, as I had been in the Senate for 12 years, I would be encouraging them not to do that. Number one, I don't think there's any need to do it. They believe constitutionally they are on the right side of law. The Supreme Court has said the legislature makes its own rules. The legislature is not held by the other rules, and they have their court's decisions going back to Goodlin, the case of Goodlin in 1943, that clearly say the legislature makes its rules and that's what governs the body. It was certainly transparent and open to the public. There were several different news outlets besides Wisconsin Eye, which made it the official historic record of what went on in that conference committee. So it was not done behind closed doors. It was in a jam-packed room. And so, first of all, I don't think they have to go back. Secondly, what would happen if they went back? The votes are there, Georgia. Never doubt it. That is a very solid caucus, with the exception of one member who hasn't voted for the bill. But they have the 17 votes. The thing that then will happen is we will have another stampede on the Capitol. We will have another complete inability for any other one person to get in safely into the Capitol, and heaven knows if there'll be any destruction of that historic place. But thirdly, this is only the first quiver, the arrow in their quiver. I believe that the opponents to this bill have a series of court actions they will be taking. We have to get through this one. As soon as we do, there will be another one. As soon as we do, there will be another one, because that's the manner they're trying to use the judiciary and the other side of government to forestall the will of the majority.
Is that what's going on, Georgia Durslotti?
Well, there's a quiver of arrows, all right, and it has to do with destroying the Democratic Party so Republicans can have a permanent majority through laws such as this that gut the collective capacity of small people against larger ones. That has to be part of the calculation from the fake Koch phone call forward. That's been pretty clear. The fact that they're now going back to the fiscal part of the budget repair bill, I mean, what really did this have to do with fiscal responsibility? Yesterday we find out that it won't make a difference in school costs. It was supposed to save all this money. We have municipal leaders saying, why did you exempt the Republican-leaning firefighters and police? What's going on here is not good government, and I think Margaret and I both agree on that point.
Yeah. What about the do-over idea? Why do you think the Republican-controlled legislature just doesn't do this over to make at least this court case go away?
Well, I think Margaret has a strong point in saying institutionally, a legislature would not want to set precedent that such a thing can go forward, but I also think that they may not have the votes anymore because there's been such pressure in home districts as well, right down to recalls, and some of those Republican senators are in very competitive districts and are in a dicey situation now.
But let's talk just a bit about the recalls, because there is a story in the news this morning that the La Crosse area Democrats have filed petitions with enough signatures to trigger a recall election of Senator Dan Kopanky, one of the eight Senate Republicans that were targeted. And this apparently is the first of the many possible recalls out there. Margaret Farrow, is it this kind of pressure that has Republicans a little bit nervous about bringing this thing back?
No, I don't think so at all. I know I've talked to some of them. I know that is not the concern. In fact, if people go back to the to their home areas, and they do, as we all know, weekly, daily, depending where they're located, I think they're hearing a very, very different reaction from the people this week. For example, Senator Wongard from Racine, brand new, former, I believe, police officer. He came out today and is beginning to look into the secondary boycotts in one of his communities, Union Grove, and the outrage that people are seeing with this threat from the unions that put a sign supporting us in the window or we're going to publicly boycott and really have a demonstration in front of your small business, whatever it may be. People are reacting to that, and so there is no weakening in the members in that caucus. On the other hand, you've got Senator Kopanky. When they looked at who could possibly be recalled successfully, I know everybody's under the gun right now with the 8-8, but Senator Kopanky's in a very, very swing district. He has been reelected. He has La Crosse in that area is very balanced. So that one doesn't surprise me at all that they were able to kind of muster what they wanted to accomplish. I personally think that we have to tighten the recall criteria. I think it's an outrage that if they don't like a person's vote, then we'll recall them. And I say that on either side, no matter what the vote is. I remember JFK's much-heralded book, Profiles of Courage, that he wrote way back in the, 50s, 60s. And people who stood up out of the norm, took some courageous step, not publicly supported at the time, and became a true profile in courage. With this instant recall attitude, nobody is willing to do the right thing as they see it if it's not what the crowd wants. And I think that is very, very dangerous. Mm-hmm. I think recalls may go forward on both sides to some number, maybe a balanced number. I think there may be one at least on each side that will be successful, but I don't think it's going to change the majority of the houses. Right. The house it's focused on right now, the Senate. And a two-year term, for example, in the Assembly or local elections, that's an instant recall. Why even have a recall in a two-year term?
Let's get Georgia Draslotti's thoughts on the recalls and the Dan Kopanky successful filing anyway.
Well, first of all, in the Assembly, you do have to wait a year for a recall, which is why it's set up that way, which is why for the Assembly, you're practically in election season again when it happens. So, we've had this rule on the books for a very, very long time, and it hasn't been used much. So something is clearly different this time. And it has to do with overplaying the hand, with not being willing to compromise at all, to taking a stance that has the governor followed by the brothers who lead the Assembly seeming to be dictatorial, or taking the whole notion of I'm the decider because I have this power way too far. If we had something other than calendar elections where we could have call another election, we wouldn't have this recall in place. We don't have that. So when the population finds something to be so egregious in terms of decision-making by the elected officials, then they should have some recourse, or we're really not a very strong democracy. What we have here are citizens going out and exercising their democratic capacity. I frankly am thrilled to see so many people engaged, and Margaret, I will tell you that I thought it was pretty important that the Tea Party people, who have by and large been unengaged, at least at the mass level, became so engaged in politics. I mean, I think this is democracy in action, and I think it's a good thing to be able to do this. It keeps the politicians in check from becoming absolutely corrupted by their power. Back to the Kopeki recall effort and the local boycotts, I think it's really important that both sides attend to not overplaying their hand. And I know that the protest movement has been very, very cautious to make sure that they can't be faulted for doing damage. And they have been careful not to damage that beautiful capital of ours, despite all the fabrications that were put out there and then retracting. They've been careful not to overplay their hands in local communities where they have generally had very strong support. So if they're starting to do these boycotts and they're starting to get backlash from them, it will be interesting to see if they do it in any other place or whether this is a trial balloon.
Let me take a call from Judy in Reedsburg. Judy, go ahead.
Yes, actually, it's Reed's town. I think some of my comments just got stated. I am against a lot of the spin language that's just gone on. I really don't think that this orderly and sort of kindly march on the state capitol was a stampede. And I do think that it's wrong to suggest that this stampeding crowd damaged our historic capitol. How in heaven's name did the marble halls of Rome survive for thousands of years when people with oily skin and greasy fingers came to Rome and touched them?
Well, the story this week had to do with that estimate of $750,000 to clean up damage at the state capitol because of the protests, and it was later reduced greatly, the estimate, and it came out something along the lines that it was just on a piece of notebook paper, that number. Margaret Farrell, you want to respond to that?
Well, I guess the term stampede wasn't mine, but what was said by very veteran newscasters watching, and I'm specifically meaning the night of the Senate convening and passing the bill, when their alarm went out through social media that said, get to the Capitol right now, and they came up State Street, and they came from every avenue they could, and literally almost took the doors down and overwhelmed the security in the building at that time. So that's how the newscasters described it. I didn't, and there's certainly footage that shows that. Besides the others, the other groups, I don't know, they certainly were timely, I would agree with the caller, but I don't know that some of the types of things that were going on and the very large crowds that were brought in, not only from Wisconsin, but from out of state by buses, I don't think that many of us would like to, say, take our grandchildren or children into the middle of that and try to explain to them, yes, this is democracy in action. So I'm very, I'm not quite sure that that's...
Well, there actually were a lot of grandchildren in that crowd because it was orderly and kindly. I have students from all around the world in my classes, and I kept asking them, could this happen anyplace but Wisconsin? I mean, you know, where would, and we named off some of the places where these students are from, where would people behave in this manner? And, you know, Wisconsin is the place that they can. And I've been out and about in the country, and cab drivers and, you know, you name it, hotel clerks, they all want to talk about what's happening in Wisconsin. On the stampede and, you know, taking what senior media faces say, they were talking about violence in Wisconsin. They were playing footage from California with palm trees. It was hilarious on Fox News. I mean, come on. Now, getting serious about damage, when you put that many people anywhere, things like the beautiful tulips that always come up likely aren't going to come up right. There is some effect of having that many people in one place. But the suggestion that there's been some kind of careless disregard, or worse, damaging that beautiful building of ours, that there's been careless disregard of what's going on, I think is just false. They've been very careful.
I need to jump in. We're way past break time. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Georgia Durst-Lotti, professor of political science at Beloit College, and Margaret Farrow, former Republican lieutenant governor of Wisconsin. Coming up, we will talk about the state Supreme Court justice race in the state of Wisconsin and other state and national news headlines in the news this week. You can join in 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question or a thought on a news story of the week, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 8:30 on this Friday, April the 1st. Coming up after 4 this afternoon, another opportunity for you to talk about the news of the week. It's your views on the news during At Issue with Ben Marins after 4. This is our regular Week in Review. Every Friday, we talk with two guests from different perspectives about all the top political news stories of the week. And let's talk about this one. This was kind of a surprise. Former Democratic Governor Patrick Lucey has withdrawn his support for Justice David Prosser. He was serving as the honorary co-chair of Justice Prosser's campaign for re-election, but the former Democratic governor of the state of Wisconsin, Lucey, is now endorsing Kloppenberg. He's troubled, he says, by Justice Prosser's temperament or lack of civility. Margaret Farrell, that cannot be good news for Justice Prosser.
Well, I guess this is going to be a very interesting final several days in this campaign. When Justice Prosser was appointed to the bench 12 years ago by Governor Thompson and then filled out, I believe, a two-year term remaining on that term and was elected then 2 years later, I don't know anyone in the state who really knew Justice Prosser, and I've known him for 25 years, that didn't think this was a perfect decision. He is a very measured, studied, reasoned man who, above everything else, respects the law. He was to me and everyone I know, and that not just on our side of the political spectrum, thought he was would be a very reasoned jurist, and he has proven that. You cannot predict his decisions in cases. His adversaries that would be on the other side of an issue in terms of a defense attorney or a plaintiff, they'll tell you they are never sure where he will come down because they know he looks thoroughly at the law, not from a particular partisan side. When he began running, he knew he was going to have a lot of opposition behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, including the Chief Justice. He would ask people early on to support him. And I'm sure that's exactly what happened with former Governor Lucey. I'm sure David went to him, spoke with him. He saw his 12-year record, knew him from years before, and said he would support him. Well, now in the heat of how this has turned into a union battle, and they are controlling the message through the candidate they have, I am sure probably, I don't know who, but it would start as high in my opinion, as the Chief Justice, would go to Governor Lucey now and say, you can't have your name on that campaign. Quite frankly, I was surprised when I heard it was on the campaign. And so for it to be withdrawn now, it does not really surprise me because of the pressure at his very senior years he is in and caring for his wife. I could see him wanting to step away from the madding crowd and not having meant to get in the middle of this kind of a fight, which is what it has deteriorated into.
What are your thoughts on this news, Georgia Durst-Lotti?
Well, first of all, as a reasoned jurist, it's amazing how many 4-3 cases we have where they split by ideology and related political parties very closely. So this is a really important election for the direction of the state. It also, because so many cases are going to come before it that will be decided. whether they're 4-3 liberal majority or 4-3 conservative majority. To call this a union battle, this is the first election since November. There are way more people than the union who have taken attention, many of whom sat out in the November election, which brought the whole sweep to the state for Republicans, that this is the first election since then that if Republicans give the chant that they won, there's a new majority, and this is the consequence of election, and I'd say both sides use that, so I'm not faulting Republicans for using that, this is the first opportunity to demonstrate that maybe there's been some reconsideration going on. As to his temperament, there have been some pretty well-known blow-ups, especially with the Chief Justice. So the temperament is able to be called into question. I know David Prosser as well, not as you do, Margaret. That is not what he presents most of the time.
Let's take a call on this from Larry in Madison. Hello, Larry.
Thank you. Prosser has never flatly rejected his campaign statement that he will compliment Governor Walker. Last week, when Joy asked him about this statement, he said only that he disavowed it, but the word disavow can mean merely not authorized. He could have made clear that he has no intention of misusing a judicial office to compliment the executive branch, but he didn't. So I think that he is still clinging to the view that the Supreme Court position he would like to hold again should be supportive of a particular politician and of the executive branch.
Is that claim that Prosser equals Walker a fair one, Georgia Derslotti first?
Well, I always introduce him as having had an illustrious career as a Republican legislator, and I think that impulse has to run deep in anybody who spent that much time in public service. So to choose a softer word like disavow rather than making clear as Larry wants is a way of acknowledging that. I would just say that it's part and parcel of the three calls I got from Right to Life to my house on his behalf, that there is a much larger effort going on here, and it's hard to disentangle the social conservatives who are running the show now from what anyone in the judiciary would do as someone who came out of that tradition.
Margaret Farrell, your thoughts on whether David Prosser would be a compliment to the Walker administration?
Well, I stand by what I said, that I believe he looks at the law, and I do not think it goes into a case with a preordained decision that this, how can I make sure I use the law to have this come out the way I want it to? And I think if you ask serious lawyers around the state who have had ongoing experience with the Supreme Court, they would attest to that, and they would say he's not predictable because he is going to look at the law. He does not come with a set agenda. You can twist his words any way you want, but that's my very strong feeling on it. The fact that both candidates took public financing immediately told anyone who understood what was going on that this campaign was going to be controlled by the other interests in the state is, I think, in a way, unfortunate. And I think the fact that we have all these other groups, we have the Greater Wisconsin Committee that's funded by union money and out of state money that is matching the interests of the groups in Wisconsin, various groups that are using that same ability that was created out of the McCain-Feingold law, really the 527s, the interest groups, they would in fact have the voice in the race. You're focusing on would a Right to Life call alert people to go vote, and I should take exception to that, I guess, because it makes it sound like he's going to be a mouthpiece for them. Well, then I take exception to all the voices that are out there supporting mostly, again, and that's why I say union, because of the collective bargaining law that is before the state right now. Suddenly the country is trying to hold solid and not let this happen, and it's their voice that is telling us, a DNR attorney with no other courtroom experience at all besides prosecuting environmental cases for the DNR as an assistant attorney general, is going to be able to be, in the next 10 years, a reasoned, balanced jurist. I'm sorry, I think when you've got the Milwaukee Bar rating him very qualified to be a judge and carry on, and she was rated as not qualified, those are the peers, and that's what I look at, and I just don't see any comparison between the candidates.
Well, Election Day is Tuesday, April the 5th. We will have an election night show on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, and we will be following up on the election, of course, on Wednesday morning here on the Ideas Network. Well, let's move from the state Supreme Court race to a few other state issues. Next week, the first of the statewide budget public hearings will start. The legislature's Joint Finance Committee will hold four public hearings on Governor Walker's two-year budget plan starting April the 7th in Stevens Point. There will be others as well. This week, the Joint Finance Committee was kind of talking to department heads and others on the state budget bill. Just your thoughts very briefly, Margaret Farrow, on whether this budget that's proposed by Governor Walker is heading the state in the right direction.
Well, I think it's heading the state in the only direction we can go unless we want to be bankrupt, if we want to be in total deeper deficit spending. And the fact that people will say, well, why did all this collective bargaining issue come first? Why not just get on to the budget? He believed, in my understanding, that there had to be a way to give the local governments and the school districts both short but, more importantly, long-term ability to deal with their budgets in a way they haven't been able to for the last 40 years. And that is by having them be able to do what this bill, as we all know by now, what it will do for them, to negotiate wages in a way that is not a mandate from a professional group, rather what here's what we can afford, and here's what we are going to offer. And the other thing is having them cooperate with their benefits. And, you know, the 5% that they're going, that the is going to be saved in terms of the employees putting their own money toward their retirement, and that is a true saving for all those who are involved now with paying at all in government. That saving is not lost to the people. They're going to get it as part of their pension. So it's not money being taken away from them. It's being money that is being put away in their pension, ultimately, to be used. So it's going to be an very interesting discussion before the four communities right now that are scheduled, besides the hearings in Madison. And I think that you're going to see the professional protesters bust into each one. You're going to have a lot of haranguing besides the crowded settings that they will have. I've served on Joint Finance. I served when W-2 was going through, when a lot of revolutionary things were happening in the state. And that's what change is about. I think this governor is taking very seriously, as many governors are around the country now, dealing with this legacy cost of pensions and benefits and dealing with the overspending that's been going on.
Mm-hmm. Georgia Derslati?
Well, I absolutely agree with Margaret that we have to deal with the overspending that's been going on. And the fact that she could be in the legislature and make revolutionary change amplifies what I believe, and that is we can do this if we don't set up an antagonistic system in the first place. I was on the school board for 6 years, which doesn't match your public service, of course, Margaret, but when I was on the school board, we had tight budgets. We had cutbacks. And I was one of the school board negotiators. And consistently, because we had amicable relations with the unions here, we figured out ways to cut the budget that didn't harm the children. And I watched the union not take any raises so that they could keep the benefits that they held more dear than they did their pay at the time. And it was hard, but they did it. And they actually offered a whole number of cost-saving measures, or here's the best way to cut that we can maintain the classroom that and quality of teaching that we want. And I think we can do this if we set up a cooperative system, but that's not the way Walker came out of the gate. He came out of the gate with a baseball bat and no, like a two-year-old. It was remarkable to me. I also do think that there will be crowds at the various places, and good for them, so that citizens, and not professional rabble-rousers, as you're putting it, that citizens are able to go and express their point of view, Tea Party and the autonomous solidarity, I think they're calling themselves, alike, that they can go and make their point of view known to these legislators. I'm glad they're going around the state to do this.
We are talking with Georgia Durslotti, a professor of political science at Beloit College, and Margaret Farrow, former Republican lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, about the news of the week. This is our week in review. We'll move on to some other issues, some state issues, some national and international, coming up in just a moment. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time for the Week in Review quiz. Here's the question. If you think you know the answer, you can call us, and we will select a winner from all of the correct answers. Here it is. Which possible 2012 presidential candidate made some noise this week for suggesting President Obama produce his birth certificate and then showed a copy of his own? Which possible 2012 presidential candidate did that this week? 1-800-642-1234 if you think you know. 1-800-642-1234. We will give you 5 minutes to call in your answers, and the winner, which we will determine randomly, will win one of the books that we featured on the program this week. We are talking with Margaret Farrow and Georgia Durslotti in our Week in Review, and let's talk a little bit about, there's a couple of other state issues I wanted to talk about before we move on to national. What do we make, Margaret Farrow, of Governor Walker asking for federal money for the train line between Milwaukee and Chicago, called the Hiawatha, less than 4 months after he gave up the $810 million for the Milwaukee to Madison line?
Well, I think what he's doing is saying, I'm not going to waste money. I'm not going to spend state money to match or to make up the difference with a federal program that has no numbers to prove it would work, that has no operational costs identified, which was the case with the high-speed rail. He's instead saying we have a reasonable need because we have a tested service that is utilized between these two major cities, and we want to make sure it is improved where it has to be improved, with perhaps number of trains, with roadbeds so it can maintain its speed. And our high speed name that's been given to this other venture is just a complete misnomer, because that is not, when people think high speed, they think the European bullet trains, they think 145 to 50 to, in China, they've hit over 200 and some miles an hour. This would have been about the same speed as the Hiawatha, and it was being totally misrepresented, I believe. He has a tested product that people use that he wants to improve, and I think he's showing his usual common sense and very good judgment on spending money, because the federal dollars are our tax dollars as much as anything else, and he's careful with both of them.
Georgia Gerislotti?
Well, his denial of it was symbolic politics in the first place, which I've said on this show many times, and I think his taking this now is an ideological blunder. If he, in fact, really wanted to stop federal spending, then he shouldn't be taking this money as well. Certainly the business community wanted the trains improved. As someone who is a proponent of mass transportation, especially as we're looking at the price of gasoline perhaps going up to as high as $5, I'm really pleased that we're going to improve our rail system someplace in the state. I am just sorry that he was so wrapped up in a campaign promise against a primary opponent that he felt compelled to reject. Good money for the state all around.
Let's briefly get your thoughts on Republicans breaking from their party lines when it comes to the state budget. Some of them are joining Democrats in questioning the governor's proposal to cut money for recycling and ending the recycling mandate and to reshape the University of Wisconsin system. Margaret Farrow, not every Republican is going to go along with those ideas of Governor Walker's?
I think that that's the normal process. I can remember having served with Governor Thompson in the legislature. Every two-year budget, as good as and thoughtful as it was, had adjustments to be made, let's say. That was a natural part of the process for item by item, things that would affect their district in ways they wouldn't affect other districts. Their voices are heard. I think that's the compromise that we look at, and I know I'm going to immediately hear from Georgia. Well, then why aren't you compromising on the other bill?
Good question.
Exactly. And I don't, in other words, if the issue to pass legislation is to have people understand it and then count your votes. And when you have your votes, you take it to the floor and you pass it. That was true in the 20-plus years the Democrats had the majority, which was ended during my tenure in the legislature when it began to be going back and forth between the two parties more. In this case, they have the votes. They know they have the votes. And just as Governor Doyle, former Governor Doyle, put through the biggest tax increase in the state in two days with no hearings, brought them to both floors. When he had the votes, everybody sat back. The Republicans didn't leave the state. They didn't stall the process. They didn't run into court and say, we don't know if this is a good bill. This can't be constitutional, because he's just soaked everybody in the state the biggest burden that has ever been put on us in a single action. So there was no compromise there, because he had the votes and he saw what he needed to balance his budget, he thought at that time, and did. That's how he balanced the budget. He got more tax money. Now we have the opposite and the other side doing this, and suddenly, where's the compromise? I stand with those comments.
And Georgia, very briefly, as we're almost out of time.
When it's a truism, when one party controls all three segments of the electoral politics, we start to see divisions inside, interinstitutional divisions, and I am really pleased to see that the legislature is doing its duty and responsibility.
Yeah, let's get Margaret Farrell first on this, that it's a national story, turning to the federal budget. Tea Party activists are rallying to put pressure on Republicans over the budget talks, saying, hang tough or else. So what do you think of that, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I think you have on both ends of the spectrum, you have people that understand an issue in a very simplistic form and say, we want it all, we want it now, and if you don't do it now, we don't understand what you're doing and we may not support you the next time. That's true on both sides. And what we're seeing in the federal government is a need for compromise, because there isn't enough votes in either house in a way to deal with the issue that can come to compromise, which now they're really having to negotiate and find a way to do it, because the houses are controlled by opposing parties or the two different parties. And so the Tea Party, who are active and become the voice of the one side of the issue. They're holding their candidates that they strongly supported to that measure. Maybe they need education in the legislative process as much as some of the others do, but it's going to be a debate that hopefully will end with a budget that will keep the government open.
Yeah, what about the possible government shutdown on April 8th, Georgia Derislati? Again, briefly, do you think that's going to happen?
Well, we'd be much better off if it didn't happen. On the other hand, sometimes that's the catalyst to get their act together and put themselves in gear and really have the kind of long-term, I mean, take care of short-term because we need some stability, and both sides need to be paying attention to this. But we do need that long-term discussion about what to do with the budget, and we need to get into defense, and we need to get into the entitlements, and we need to figure out real savings for this.
Could I just interject, though? The reason we're at this point is because the Democrats did not pass a budget.
Oh, don't be so simplistic about the whole thing.
It's true.
Come on. Republicans in the Senate. Why pass it when Republicans in the Senate would hold it up?
Hold on. We have to get brief comments on another very important issue. President Obama gave an address to the nation this week on U.S. involvement in Libya, saying it needed to be done when it was done for humanitarian reasons, and we're not going to be there very long. Are you convinced, Georgia Derislati?
Well, so many Americans really behind the simple notion that if we just fly over and bomb, somehow we can, you know, make a great change. Secretary Clinton said over and over again, it's not that easy, and that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, it makes great video for TV, but it's dangerous. It's a slippery slope. We're beginning to see the Obama doctrine emerge about how we deal with these, and it'll be interesting to watch to see if we stick to the kind of multilateral call that he is making, and just how carefully we are about not putting more boots on the ground than some trainers and some intel.
Margaret Farrell?
Well, when President Obama went into the White House and began his service in these 4 years, his weakest part of his leadership was considered international, and I think that's being borne out. I don't think he told us a very clear path and very clear plan the other night, and I don't think he's exhibiting one. I don't think he really knows what he wants to do and how he wants to lead the country. I agree that I think Secretary Clinton has had a much stronger voice in all of this, and I wish she was listened to more by the White House.
Well, we had a bajillion calls guessing the Week in Review quiz question, and Bruce in Kenosha is the winner. Congratulations, Bruce. He got the question right, that it was Donald Trump, the possible 2012 presidential candidate, suggesting this week that President Obama produce his birth certificate. In an interview Monday morning, the Donald said he was really concerned about whether President Obama was born in the United States. Trump then released his own birth certificate. But analysts noted it was not an official copy. In an interview yesterday, Trump went as far as saying there's a good chance that Obama was not born in the country. Trump has said he would make up his mind by June as to whether or not he will run for president. We have less than a minute to go. Georgia Derislati, do you think he will?
Well, if it helps his pocketbook and celebrity status. I don't usually agree with Karl Rove, but he is right about Trump being dangerous for the Republican Party, and I actually feel sorry for Republicans that he's out there doing that. This is where the weakness of the American political party system, where you can't stop somebody from using your name, is at play. Margaret, I feel sorry for you.
Oh, Margaret, what do you think of his possible candidacy?
I appreciate your sympathy, but I'll be strong, Georgia. I think Donald Trump is going to continue to make quite a few headlines, say some things that are more economically from the private sector legitimate, and have his own view of the partisan politics. I don't in the end think he will be a candidate, and if he is, he won't go far.
Thank you both very, very much for joining us, and happy April Fool's Day. Watch out for those pranks, okay?
Thank you.
Margaret Farrell, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, and Georgia Derislati, Professor of Political Science at Beloit College. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Michelle Good for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.